From the Things Aren't Always As They Appear department, today is an episode about sweet potatoes. They are not yams, and they never were. They are a well-traveled tuber, and one that has been cooked and eaten for some many years. My southern wife loves them, as her grandma made them, so we make them every Thanksgiving, and we enjoy them other times of the year also. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 169.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Hello, folks. Dan Green here, the Culinary Libertarian. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Everyone loves muffins. Kids like working in the kitchen, so put two and two together and let the kids learn to bake muffins. Use my cookbook, Foolproof Muffins, recipes that work every time. It's a Kindle book, and I'll add the link to the show notes page, or you can find it on Amazon. Thanksgiving has come and gone. That's not the news part. What might be the news part is you probably didn't have yams. Oh, sure, maybe the sign at the grocery store read yams. Maybe the can label did, but the label makers at the grocery store don't know that fennel isn't anise, and for that matter, neither do some growers. So depending on the store, to know what they are selling isn't well-placed faith. Way back on episode 78, I talked about potatoes. From that episode, I said this. While in the Caribbean, the Spanish were introduced to the patatas, which Taino Indians roasted. Christopher Columbus said they tasted like raw chestnuts. John Hawkins described them as slaver and adventurer, changed the spelling to potatoes and called them the most delicate roots that may be eaten. They are, of course, sweet potatoes, which bear no botanical relationship to the white potato we know. The white potato was called potato by Europeans, making the visual connection to the two, as well as assigning the white potato the famed aphrodisiac properties of the sweet potato. Now, I just quoted my own show, so what do you know about that? From the Library of Congress website Inside Adams, like Samuel, they write, quote, England's John Gerard wrote about the potato, sweet potato, in his 1597 Herbal or General History of Plants. Along with a description of the plant, he also described how it is eaten, roasted and infused with wine, boiled with prunes, or roasted with oil, vinegar, and salt. He also suggests that the sweet potato comforts, strengthens, and nourishes the body, as well as procuring bodily lust. End quote. The lust of merry old England sounds interesting, but that's not this show. For some while, the sweet potato is called simply potato, and that adds to or creates some confusion when looking for old-time recipes. From that same Library of Congress page, quote, it wasn't until after the 1740s that the term sweet potato began to be used by American colonists to distinguish it from the white, parenthesis, Irish, close parenthesis, potato, end quote. This Library of Congress piece was written, as the author says, to find the answer to why candied yams happen at Thanksgiving. So, this gives us a few things to discuss. Yams aren't sweet potatoes, and they're not even the same plant, and what might have been actually served at the second Thanksgiving, but the first feast, and I'll accept that even that claim may be in dispute. The candied part of that Thanksgiving dish seems to start in 1880s. In the Boston Cooking School cookbook, there's a recipe for sweet potatoes au gratin, which reads, quote, cut 5 medium-sized cold boiled potatoes in 1/3-inch pieces. Put a layer in buttered baking dish, sprinkle with salt, pepper, and 3 tablespoons brown sugar. Dot over with 1 tablespoon of butter. Repeat. Cover with buttered cracker crumbs and bake until the crumbs are brown, end quote. Well, that sounds pretty sweet, both kind of cool and a lot of sugar. But if I'm honest, it sounds pretty yummy. Missing in that dish, and common on Thanksgiving dishes these days, are the marshmallows. Now, 1919 is the year the Post mentions marshmallows and candied yams. I'll add the link to the blog post on this show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/169. It's an interesting read with some good comments at the bottom to add to the discussion. Let's take a trip back a bit. I found quite a bit of content arguing this time period or that time period was the first time sweet potatoes were discovered. Bleh, who cares? For those interested in such things, it's thrilling. I'm not thrilled by that. I am interested in their botanical similarities where I thought there were none. Sweet potatoes are part of the morning glory family. My best stab at the Latin is convolvulaceae. Potatoes are part of the nightshade family, but both are from the order Solanae. Again, maybe a butcher. That green part under the skin of white potatoes is solanine, an alkaloid similar to nicotine and caffeine that can be toxic, not usually deadly, but maybe to the young or the old or infirm. Ken Albala, food historian and former guest on episode 66, the fruitcake episode, wrote an article on theconversation.com about the medieval origins of common Thanksgiving dishes and writes, quote, candied yams were also a 16th century staple. In Shakespeare's The Merry Wives of Windsor, when Sir John Falstaff exclaims that it should rain kissing comfits and hail potatoes, he's actually talking about Virginia sweet potatoes, which had been brought back to Europe in the late 16th century. Parenthesis, these weren't just candied, they were also considered an aphrodisiac, end parenthesis, and end quote. This passage is to show that even in the 16th century, there was confusion about what is a yam and what is a sweet potato. As Ken wrote, those were sweet potatoes. So, what the heck are yams, and why is this so confusing? The Encyclopedia of American Food and Drink includes this in the entry for sweet potatoes. Quote, the confusion with the true yam came from the habit of slaves calling the American sweet potato by an African word, parenthesis, either gula, Najam, Senegal, Nwami, or by Dajambi, and parenthesis, meaning to eat. The word was first recorded in America in 1676, and quote, and apologies for linguistic atrocities. Okay, at least we're getting somewhere. Both the true yam and the sweet potato are tubers. A tuber is a swollen portion of underground stems, and that's a botanical distinction that it's not a root. It matters, but not when you're in the store. True yams, according to the encyclopedia, can grow up to 7 feet in length and are generally sweeter. The appearance of a true yam next to sweet potato is plain that these are not the same thing. Once you see them, it's a bit of a puzzle how they can be confused. A yam is kind of it's browner, it's bigger, it's kind of almost, scaly in its appearance. It's kind of, it doesn't immediately say, eat me. Sweet potato, by the way, has over 400 varieties. That's a lot. The sweet potato has two main types of plant, the vining type, which makes vines, and the bush type. The vine sweet potato is just that. It grows low to the ground and has these vines. The bush type is tall and stays put. Sweet potatoes can be grown in a pot, and for such a thing, a bush plant is best. The vining sweet potato has been used just for its prettiness, for aesthetics, because it really is pretty. It makes some really beautiful flowers. So of the, well, there's 10 or 20, or, you know, you can find any number of websites claiming some number of the best sweet potatoes, but 10 for a round number, 10 different varieties of sweet potatoes that are pretty popular are the Beauregard, the Georgia Jet, which can grow up to 40-foot-long vines, the Jewel, the Garnet, red hues that remain after you bake them, that's kind of cool, the Heart of Gold, the Bunch Puerto Rico, which is a bush variety, so that's your growing in a pot on the back porch potato, Stokes, which has purple skin and purple flesh, the Okinawa, which is bred for the kind of the environment and climate of Japan and Hawaii, Japanese, and Hana. Now, one problem with knowing a variety name is the challenge of identifying it in the store. And there's a good chance the boxes don't say so. And there's an excellent chance that Skippy the produce clerk doesn't even know that there's differences. So growing them, that's at least a reason to know some of the different names, because like the Okinawa, it may not grow where you live and certainly won't grow here. If you want to grow them, check with your local extension agency, if there is one, or gardeners or farmers in your area to learn what they know about soil conditions and pH and other matters. If you've ever gardened, you know that when the food is ripe, you pick it and eat it. That's kind of the whole idea. Grow fresh food to eat fresh food. Sweet potatoes can be eaten right after they're harvested, but there is a recommended next step called curing. Curing increases the sweetness of the sweet potato and dries them out a little, gets them firm and ready for long storage if you need that. Now, this is one of the things that makes the sweet potato nice in places where you have a root cellar is once the wintertime comes or cold weather where plants don't want to respond to growing in, you know, soil, well, now you have a pantry or root cellar of things that will last you for some while. So cured and stored properly, there is no shortage of interwebs opinions about what properly is. Sweet potatoes can last about 4 months in those optimal conditions. Now, I don't know if those grocery store sweet potatoes are cured or not. A first step of curing is 7 to 10 days. And that's really just getting the moisture out a little bit, firming up the flesh of the potato, probably making them not break in the box as easily. The other stage of curing can take a couple more weeks or a month. And it seems to me probably unlikely that a sweet potato grower is going to be having hundreds, maybe thousands of cases of potatoes waiting to be sold. But maybe, who knows? I don't. And I couldn't find out. So most cooks who work with sweet potatoes will confirm that sometimes sweet potatoes seem to have a will of their own when it comes to cutting. Big sweet potatoes can be very hard to cut, even with the sharpest knife, and blade may be pushed off course, going left or right. Once they are boiled or baked, then, of course, they're as soft as can be. That's expected. The important takeaway about cutting big, raw sweet potatoes is be careful. The knife can twist and either hurt your wrist or, worse, slip and somehow cut you. So cutting you is bad. That's a risk worth avoiding, so don't do that. That Thanksgiving table with sweet potato souffle or candied sweet potatoes or maybe a sweet potato pie may have more culture and history than we expect. I made a mention of that. Ken Abala's piece also has this passage, quote, famed English chef Robert May, in the mid-17th century cookbook, The Accomplished Cook, has a great recipe for (sweet, potato pie, which wouldn't seem too amiss on the Thanksgiving table today, though the coxcomb, testicles, and bone marrow would be considered perhaps a bit over-garnished, end quote. May's massive book was published in 1660. Fanny Farmer's Boston School cookbook offers a version of glazed sweet potatoes, as does Rosamund Grant's Caribbean and African cookery, and so too does early California and Mexican cookbook by Don Ricardo. There's an interesting thread to consider in all these recipes that they're all a glazed candied sweet potato, and then why is it that sugar and spices came with this, and then maybe why is it always only a holiday dish? Now, when May wrote his book in 1660, spices and sugar were very expensive, and certainly not everybody had them. Even when Fanny Farmer wrote her book in the late 1800s and copyrighted up through 1912, sugar and spices were more scarce than they are now. Sweet potatoes do seem to appear interchangeable with pumpkin in muffins or pies. Pumpkin muffins are pretty great. Sweet potato cheesecake is also pretty great. There's pretty much any place that you see a recipe for butternut squash, soup, ravioli filling, maybe, you know, risotto, I don't know. That sounds weird to me. It's possible. But as saute, just cut them into dices and saute them. Add them either as a puree soup or garnish inside of a soup. Wow. And with sausage and sweet potatoes. Man. That sounds like someone needs to make that. You cooks thinking, put that together and send me the idea. I'm going to see what you came up with. I like that idea. Let's go back to that sweet potato pie. Adrian Miller wrote an article investigating sweet potato pie and how it came to be so identified with the American South and how it is that there is almost this clear geographic line between pumpkin pie and sweet potato pie on Thanksgiving. Now, I'll link to the article on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/169. Instead of coming to the South from Africa, which would seem a perfectly reasonable conclusion, sweet potatoes and sweet potato pie came from England. Miller writes, quote, wealthy American colonial kitchens eagerly adopted the latest culinary trends out of England, and the big houses at plantations in the antebellum South were no exception. Flip through the pages of the iconic Southern cookbooks used in those elite kitchens, the Virginia Housewife, the Kentucky Housewife, and the Carolina Housewife, you'll find strikingly similar recipes for pumpkin pie, sweet potato pie, and squash pie existing side by side in the dessert section. Southern cooks, black and white, turned more often to recipes for sweet potatoes because in the South, they were easier to grow than edible pumpkins, end quote. A challenge many cooks seem to have with sweet potato pie or pumpkin pie from home-baked pureed pumpkin is the inconsistent product. Sometimes it's very watery, and sometimes not. A can of pumpkin is pretty much the same year after year. What to do when your sweet potato puree is too wet and you only figure that out when your pie won't slice and serve? Now, that's a legitimate question and a real cook problem, and that might also be another episode. I like medium diced sweet potatoes cooked like cottage fries, which means one layer on a pan, medium heat to start. I like maybe half inch or so, fairly uniform. The ends get wonky, but that's how that goes. I use bacon fat because it tastes good. Butter's a good choice. Lard's a fine choice. If you've got beef fat or chicken fat or duck fat or goose fat, that's a fine choice. What is not a fine choice is any of those so-called vegetable oils, the little seed oils. Leave those on the shelf. Don't use those. One tip I will share with you is if you're making cottage fries the regular way, I would rinse the starch off of the white potatoes because that's going to brown. We want them to brown, but we don't want that to brown too fast before the middle of the potato gets cooked. I don't rinse my sweet potatoes. You can. There's no reason not to do it. But because I don't rinse them, that starch is there, and it does start to brown more quickly. So I get the one layer of stuff in the pan is really important because you want to make sure every piece in your pan at some point is in contact with the pan. If you have so much stuff in the pan that there's a second layer of potatoes, sweet or white, the problem is that they may cook because the steam coming from below may cook them a little bit, but they're not going to brown. They're not going to have that crispy outside, tender inside, and that's going to flummox pretty much the whole affair. So one layer, so a wider pan is big, is better. 12-inch pan. If you have, cast iron is good. Teflon, if you've got it, don't buy it again. A good seasoned stainless steel pan, one layer is the key. Start on medium heat, and when they start to get brown, lower the heat a little bit, and then add butter because it's going to absorb some of that fat, which is fine. But once you have no fat left in the pan, you go from browning to burning, and nobody wants that. Sweet potatoes can be made into French fries, and I frankly find that tricky. The tricky part is that we have that moisture thing. There's no way to know by looking at a potato, either one, how much moisture is inside the potato. And sweet potatoes cut the same size as regular potato fries tend to have so much moisture inside that it never really comes out. You don't get the starchy consistency of a regular French fry like you do on white potatoes because there's less starch. So you have to cut them thinner, and they don't even at that, you'll get a good brown on them, but they don't last crispy. Now, if there's a way to do it and you figured it out, great. Let me know. I don't mind them, but I know that they're not here, right? I haven't figured it out. They don't stay crispy. That's okay. I understand that part. If you cut them really thin, almost like hair, or a little thicker, fry them like a garnish, then they stay crispy, then they're kind of fun. That's pretty good. Sweet potato chips can be crispy. Obviously, there's the bake them, and then with butter and salt is fantastic. It's very simple, but it's good. Let's take a moment out for a word from Jake about his Tasting Anarchy podcast.
Hey everyone, Jake here, host of the Tasting Anarchy podcast. Join my co-host Mason and I each week as we explore the world of wine and alcohol through a Liberty lens. You can find us on all your major podcatchers, tastinganarchy.com or Tasting Anarchy on Twitter. Tasting Anarchy, your wine and liberty podcast. Find out how much government is in your drink.
I asked Jimmy Clegg, former guest and my own personal keto guru, if sweet potatoes are keto. His answer was yes, they are, as he sees it. Now, he acknowledges that not everybody agrees, or he doesn't agree with everybody. He's not in the consensus of that particular opinion. Now, I know that some of you no sugar, no grains folks are gnashing your teeth, but Jimmy makes a good point. His point is, how many carbs do you intend to eat in a day or that day? A baked or boiled sweet potato with butter and salt, whole the brown sugar, whole the marshmallows, can be part of a healthy lifestyle and, as Jimmy sees it, as part of the keto lifestyle. While there may be divisions on that point, I think there is no division on the point that white potatoes being excluded from a healthy or keto lifestyle is a sound choice. But again, how many carbs do you want to eat that day and where do you want to get them? The keto conversation isn't really the main part of the show. I'm hoping to get somebody, I want to get into some other aspects of diet and fat and food, and possibly we can find a way to address part of this idea, but get more into the sugars part. But it's at least a thing to think about, and there's in diet and eating, there is an astonishing amount of information to sift through. And I made the point with Jimmy on episode 14 and with Kyle and with lots of people that it can be very difficult for somebody legitimately looking for information about anything to discriminate from good information from bad information. How do you know? And sometimes the bad information comes from a really glossy, fabulous, beautiful website. Oh, this must be right. Well, so it's tough. It really is. It's really tough to know what's what. And I think with diet, there's some things that are easy to know. Processed food is bad, so eat none or as little as possible. I know that that's easy to say. I know how hard it is to do. This isn't an episode to be didactic on you about how to make your choices, but the takeaway from this diet part is the thing we were told when we were kids: moderation. Calories in don't equal calories out, and calorie counting is useless. But if you eat to satiation, then stop. But I'm getting far afield from sweet potatoes in history, and sometimes that happens. So anyway, I'm going to leave it there. I will add the Adrian Miller link to the show notes page, and it is a well-written piece. Adrian Miller happens to have earned the James Beard Award for one of his cookbooks, maybe his own cookbook. I didn't catch that part, but it's a good read. I will also add a link to Jimmy's keto episode on the show notes page. And while time is of the essence for Christmas gifts, it's never out of season to give the gift of spices and flavorings. Check out the impressive selection of baking spices. That means cardamom and cinnamon and nutmeg and allspice and cloves by using my affiliate link, culinarylibertarian.com/savoryspice. And if you act, I don't know, if they get it to you in time for Christmas, depends on when you order. But you can make your own sweet potato pie with some fine spices. If you like what I'm doing with the show, I would appreciate your support at culinarylibertarian.com/support. I did add the Bitcoin link, and then there's the Patreon and the PayPal and the Venmo. And share this episode around on your social media feeds. And if you happen to be the one who sees it, then give it a like and help spread the social media juice to other folks on your friends list. Thank you very much. I appreciate you listening. I think the garlic episode is going to happen. I'm hoping. I'm excited about that. So we'll see. And have a good week. music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.